If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, with his two goals on Sunday, Erling Haaland, do that again because it was Saturday. Just said the wrong day. Well, these two goals on Saturday, Erling Haaland became City's, not even City's. I'll do that again because I picked the wrong entity this time. There we are. Great guns so far this year.
He's going to call him Egil Ostenstad on this game.
Egil Ostenstad got the most goals by a Norwegian.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club and this is your show.
Manchester City were one controversial refereeing decision away from two wins this week, but don't let that cloud your judgment. The penalty at the end of the 2-2 draw with Monaco means the scoreline perhaps doesn't tell the whole story, but maybe the same could be said of the margin of the 5-1 win over Burnley as well. We'll discuss both of those games on this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Plus, as Erling Haaland becomes the top Norwegian scorer in the Premier League, we'll hear about the other 11 City players from the past who are their country's leading scorer in the English top flight. Any excuse for me to crowbar George Weah into a podcast 25 years after he played for the club will definitely be taken. That's coming up later on in the show. We'll also hear from the Brentford fan Mike Johnston from the Ealing Road podcast as we look ahead to City's final game before the next international break. And after a couple of weeks away, we'll squeeze in some of your listener questions as well. I'm David Mooney. Joining me for this week's frivolities, we've got City fan Dan Burke.
Hello.
And from Sporting News, Dom Farrell.
Hello.
Hello. I thought I would keep the mood nice and light to start us off with. And ask you, Dom, what do you think about when you're lying in the dark alone at night?
It's that the Erling Haaland one. I'll tell you what, like, it's like it. I mean, you know, there's his whole "what happens when you die" thing. That you know, as a lapsed Catholic, I can tell you, is no picnic of a thing to think about. just for him, with like the whole Norse mythology and Valhalla and all that jazz. It's got to be. I was thinking that that's got to be really intense if you're sort of into your Norse mythology and stuff. Like, yeah. But I think if you regularly score on Derby Day, you get Eternity and Valhalla. I think they're the rules.
Don't know. When you read the quote, Dan, it is quite a dark thing to be thinking of for a man who's actually in quite good form at the moment. Yeah. It's a bit scary when you lie alone in bed before you go to sleep and you think, what happens the day I die? Are you going to heaven? Are you going to hell? Where are you going?
I was desperately trying to think of a pun on the calling United the Rags and Ragnarok then, but I couldn't make it. So just pretend I did.
Yeah, the Ragnarok.
Yeah. The Ragnarok, there we go. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what's got into Erling's head there. It's it is quite dark, isn't it? I'm a little bit worried about him. I think he should probably be focusing his energies on trying to put the ball in the net, which he's done quite
a fair
amount of so far, but perhaps could have done it one or two more times last night. I hope he comes to some sort of peace with the afterlife at some point.
Yeah, which is not where I expected this episode to start, but here we are.
Take some magnesium, Erlin. It's great for getting to sleep, I find.
Really? I'm a troubled sleeper, so yeah, maybe.
Oh yeah, get some of that down you. It's lovely.
Oh, I can never, yeah, I can never drop off. Yeah.
I was sleeping badly before I read Erling Haaland's quotes, so yeah, all aboard the magnesium train, isn't it, I think.
Yeah, a magnesium train would be. Horrid, really. Like, really reactive, isn't it, magnesium? So it wouldn't work as a train material.
Wouldn't it melt if it got hot as well, like on the tracks?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's probably why they don't make trains out of magnesium. But who are we to argue? That's one mystery solved. Let's drag ourselves kicking and screaming back to the performances this week, Dan, because take the score lines away. Were these more like City performances than we've seen for a while?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, the Monaco game, I thought City were fantastic for a lot of it, and it was a real shame, you know, that they couldn't get the win in the end, that they were, I don't want to say cheated out of a result, but, you know, I think it was a very controversial decision, and I think, you know, there's a a problem that City have at the moment sometimes, where they're just not quite there for 100% of the games. They're not quite killing games off sometimes, which was the case against Monaco. Obviously, they did do that against Burnley, but I think Burnley was quite different in that they were not great for the kind of middle portion of the game and then, you know, finished the game off in the end. So I feel good about City at the moment because I feel like progress is being made and I'm seeing improvement and I'm seeing a bit more like the old City. But they're just not quite there yet in many respects, I think. But I think the results will come in time and we've just got to be patient with them, really.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it, Dom? That, like, we've spent the last couple of weeks talking about how Guardiola's constantly been talking about improving the mentality, improving the vibes, getting the feel-good factor, all that sort of stuff back. And the performances, I think you can see an upward trajectory, like in general, over the course of the season. Brighton and Spurs were not great, but like they have shown improvement since then. But like, it's almost like the results will follow. If you get those first two right, eventually you get back to where City were and the results should come, right? Or is that just an optimistic outlook on the week?
Yeah, sunny side up as always on this podcast, isn't it? Happy clappers. I think you mentioned the Tottenham and the Brighton game, and I think after those, and I think everyone looked at that kind of week of hell with, you know, a derby, which I know United are what they are at the moment, but it's a derby game. Then Conte's Napoli and Arsenal, it was like that could be grim. So I think there was an element which probably reached its fullest extent in the Arsenal game of you get through, needs must, you know, however you get through. And I think any, although obviously there was the disappointing ending to the Arsenal game, but I think anyone would have taken 7 points out of those 9. I think what we're into now will look like a really important part of the season looking back on it, is it's a run of very winnable games across competitions back to back, where there's a chance to, you know, build a little bit of momentum. I think if you look until the run from now up until Liverpool at home on the 9th of November, I think admittedly a lot of them are away from home, but I think a lot of those games are games you would expect City to go into and come out with the 3 points more often than not. Certainly a City team who are moving back towards being in a good place and going to go for a title.
Do the points matter in those games, though? Or is it for City to be back to what City were? Is it more important for them to play like the old City?
I think the points do matter. At a time when, obviously, Liverpool just dropped points and they're 5 points ahead. I think one of the things that I think they struggled with last season, aside from, you know, everyone being injured and knackered and just fucked, was that early
solid
on
assessment, that. Yeah.
the sum up last season in 3 words. I know at the same time we're going to talk about how there's a lot of player turnover, so this isn't entirely true, but certainly as a club and even, you know, people around the first team squad, the whole operation is geared towards, as Guardiola says, being there in March and having things to go for. And I think one of the things that compounded their problems last winter was that they'd slipped so far away. They also weren't playing for what they normally play for, and it was this sort of mad survival spiral kind of thing. I think the results, like if you look at, you know, Brentford, Everton, Villarreal in the Champions League, Villa, Swansea in the Carabao, Bournemouth and Dortmund at home, I think that this is a time to start putting together one of those churning runs. And as much as people sort of got into the idea of how City look more adept on the break, and they do, and, you know, Doku and Haaland have been big success stories start of the season, Foden's looking properly back at it. You put those rumbling runs together where you just like tune up and then stick the ball up your jumper kind of games. You get those on those sort of runs in these runs of fixtures. So I think it's a good time for them to be looking more like their old selves. I mean, I think the Burnley and Monaco games are probably no more than 6 or 7 out of 10 performances, and they're not 90-minute performances. But if either of those are turned into, like, you know, Burnley under Mark Hughes or Monaco in 2017, if there'd been mad games, you think, where are they going? Whereas it's like, it does look like there's a bit of a direction of travel at the moment, which is good.
I disagree on the Monaco game being only 6 out of 10, by the way. I thought that was at least a 7 or an 8. I thought they were really, really good. And were it not for them hitting the bar a couple of times, their keeper making a few good saves, there's a very different complexion and outcome on that game, I think. And we're talking about a really good performance and talking about, oh my God, like City are really back here. So yeah, it's a big if. You've got to score the goals, guys. As Pepper said in the past, you've got to finish games off, kill teams off. But I thought that was a really, really encouraging performance, more so than Burnley. But, you know, the Burnley scoreline, I think, flattered City and puts a different complexion on things. But, you know, they got the win, which is the most important thing there.
I'm interested, Dan, to pick up on Dom's point about how everyone got excited about the counter-attacking and the directness. Do you feel the performance against Monaco was good? Because in large spells, they forced Monaco to drop. And they basically had Monaco in their own box and they had possession around the edge of the box, working a way through. And it felt like they had control of the game.
Yeah, and also I think some of the passing was like really intricate. You know, Foden at the heart of that, taking those passes on the half turn. That's a massive cliche to say about Phil Foden at this point, isn't it? But there are a few finer sights in football. You know, Haaland's movement is causing havoc. You know, that second goal was a fantastic header, and then everybody's, you know, contributing. I thought Bernardo was good in that game. Rodri isn't quite there yet, obviously, but he's really played a great role in kind of dictating the tempo and helping just pin the opposition back. And you just, I can feel City sort of cooking on gas a little bit now, and it's starting to come together to look like, you know, the best that we've seen from Guardiola over the past couple of years, the past few years. So you sort of hope that it's just this improvement is just going to continue, and we're going to see, you know, City getting better and better, and that we are going to see more sort of 7, 8, 9 out of 10 performances in the coming games. And I think with the style of play, it's just going to be a case of horses for courses. You know, that Arsenal game was quite a unique game in that City went there with the resources that they had on that day and the way that they knew Arsenal were going to play, and decided that that was the best way to approach the game, and almost got a win out of it. You know, got a good result in the end. Were quite unfortunate not to win the game, perhaps with a sort of wonder goal getting the equaliser for Arsenal. And then other games, they're going to come up against teams who will approach it completely differently. And I think City have just got to be able to respond to that. And that's been a little bit of a problem over the years. I think that they haven't been very responsive to the way that other teams have set up. It's been kind of a, we'll play our game no matter what. And I think, you know, the way that football is evolving and the way that, like, every team that you play against, I thought, you know, for as good as City were against Monaco were actually really good as well. And I thought Burnley were pretty good at the weekend. And I think every team that City come up against now, there's a lot of quality that they have to face, and there's no easy games anymore, really, which is another massive cliche. But I think that is becoming truer and truer all the time. And I think the way that, you know, the coaching staff that were brought in was a bit of a response to that over the summer, that we just have to evolve a little bit and change the way we approach certain games. So it's good to see, yeah, a little bit of... a bit of flexibility to the way they're playing, I think.
Yeah. Dom, is the directness and the counter-attacking, is that something that, as excited people get about it, it's actually, for the remainder of this season, we might not actually see a lot of it?
I mean, it's one of those things that if they have to do it, they will do it. And it's good to see now that they can do it well. I mean, I think all the best Guardiola sides, like if you're going as far back as Sané and Sterling on the wings, but also like Kevin De Bruyne would love to drive a counter-attack. I mean, I think a lot of people have seen his assist for Napoli last night. It was just absolutely textbook De Bruyne. So that was always there. But I mean, it can't be the plan. I mean, I know like it, in the false nine seasons, it kind of got to the extremes of them rejecting counter-attacks and no reasons for that. This team isn't as well calibrated and intricate as that team was. So, yeah, there's a thing that, well, there's no point really doing that. But, like, there was, I mean, I know it's a bit of a bone of contention. And I certainly thought we'd seen the last of Bernardo on the right wing. And I can see why some people don't like it. But there were points last night, and this is the first of two pep-pilled points I'm going to make. When they were pushing Monaco back, and it, like, also in the period around the moves that led to Guardiola's really good ball for Haaland's first goal, I kind of quite liked seeing Bernardo holding the width and then knocking the ball back inside where Foden was doing great things. And like, you know, Foden's looking really good, but Bernardo playing there, certainly last night, facilitated Foden looking good to an extent. So yeah, it doesn't have to be one thing or another. I mean, if we talk, you know, when we talked about like the good City teams over the last four, five, 6 years. The one thing they've said is that they're susceptible and, you know, teams will look to get them on the break. Now, I don't want to sound like a sort of, yeah, a big sort of Guardiola football snob here, but if the way that everyone threatens them is on the break, is everyone can counterattack. Do you know what I mean? You know, if you've got a couple of fast elite level football players, you should be able to string a decent counterattack together. What everyone can't do is the stuff that City were looking like they were getting back to in Monaco, and they were getting back to when it was 11 against 11 against Napoli and properly controlling and pushing teams back and suffocating them. But yeah, I don't think anyone's saying now that if there's games where they've got 70% possession, let's forget about counterattacks. Because, you know, Doku's looking brilliant, Haaland's looking on great form, but yeah, it's not an either or, I don't think. It's like they're not going to just play basketball games or have 80% possession.
Yeah. Dan, do we need to talk about the penalty? I assume I assume most listeners and everybody, like a lot of people, will fall into the camp of, yeah, I can see why it's been given, but probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's a very anal application of the rules, isn't it? I mean, is that a textbook high foot dangerous play?
Well, the problem that I have with that is that if he's given a penalty for high foot is an indirect offence. So it's not a penalty.
Can you have indirect offences in the area nowadays, though?
I don't know. I assume it's still an indirect free kick. So it has to be. If it is an indirect kick, and I should probably have checked this, then what has to have been given is a foul, not high foot.
Mm. So we should have had an indirect free kick.
Well, VAR can't give that.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as Dier went down and kind of like screamed like he'd been shot, and as soon as the players crowded the ref, and then obviously when he goes over to the screen, you know it's going to be a penalty, don't you? And I just think, like, referees decide how they're going to apply the rules to certain situations, it feels like, rather than actually following the rules sometimes. And if that was, you know, just a case of, like I said, a textbook high foot, dangerous play, that's a penalty, like, kind of fair enough. But I think, like, common sense dictates that when you've seen a replay and you've seen the fact that he kind of got a foot on the ball, didn't really touch Dier at all, if at all, I think it was a bit of a farce. But at the same time, yeah, I can't see why it's been given, to be honest.
Dom, I was, having watched the Newcastle against Arsenal game and then seen the fallout from that, I was under the impression that a defender winning the ball in the box is a penalty these days. So it just had to be given, didn't it?
Well, yes. The City need an equivalent to that Matt Scott guy. Absolutely mental about this.
There's an open goal for one of us there, isn't there? Who's going to take it?
Sort of blaming the penalty on like some sort of tactics island in a yacht who like got straight off at the harbour last night in Monaco. Everyone just screams common sense around these things, and that's sometimes a bit reductive. But I think one thing we found with VAR is all the little bits and bobs that are bought in to try and make officials' life easier. It's like you can kind of justify giving anything, and if you go point by point. But if we're giving that for dangerous play, I think the fact he's got to the ball first is significant. I think the fact it's his... not that anyone wants a shin pad wrapping around their mush. I mean, I know Bernardo said Eric Dier dived, but it did look a bit painful. But the fact it's not a boot or a stud in the face, I think, is significant. I mean, at what point? I don't know. I just think those combination of factors that Nico gets the ball first, he doesn't stud him in the head. Mm. I mean, yeah. One thing I'd say counter to it is the Monaco players appealed all straight away, but my instant thought was, what are you on about? Yeah, it's one of those that doesn't feel right, but you inevitably shrug that it's going to get given, which I guess is maybe a
modern
a bit
football
of a in
it.
Itself.
Yeah. Modern football. Yeah.
It feels like the punishment doesn't fit the crime, doesn't it, really? And I always get that when something like that happens, I always get that same feeling that I remember getting at primary school when you did something a bit naughty and one of the other kids went, oh, I'm going to tell the teacher on you. Like, that's what VAR is now, isn't it? It's someone telling the teacher on you for doing something that's like maybe slightly against the rules, maybe slightly not correct, but get over it. Like, kind
you
of,
think,
you know.
You think you've got away with the tension, and then the teacher gets the old, goes over and checks the monitor and finds out it was your paper aeroplane.
Yeah, goes over and checks the whole monitor, I think, is what they do. I feel bad as well for Nico, Dom, because he was playing really well up to that point, and then he's conceded this penalty. Bob got in touch to say, do we feel bad for Nico? Clearly trying very hard and getting lots of intense coaching from Pep, and then he gives away the free kick that led to the penalty. Both incorrect decisions, in my opinion, I should point out. But it feels like the last thing he needed. Will this count against him in terms of selection going forward, and does it open the door for someone like Kovacic to come back in?
Well, he didn't get his ear chewed off for 5 minutes coming off the pitch last night, so that probably shows his week's been trending in the right direction. I mean, I was wondering if anyone was ever going to see him again after the Huddersfield monologue. But I think it has been a good week for him, and it's been a timely one with Guardiola talking about Rodri and how like that situation's got to be managed. And like Rodri got an hour in last night, but it looked like hard work for him a bit of time, certainly after half time. I mean, I know that Nico played quite a bit in a midfield too at Porto, and I'd wondered, particularly up until the Arsenal game when Reinders looked like he was struggling a bit, whether we might see both of them together. But the impression I've sort of got the last few games, certainly this week, is in possession. Guardiola seems to want to go back to that thing he used to do where you've got the one holder, because that puts Foden and Reinders sort of in those pockets that he likes. But it's particularly good with Phil, because I have this idea of Foden being a number 10. I quite like him being a little bit off to the side and having a license to come a bit deeper and get more involved, and that's been really good. So maybe we're not going to see Rodri and Nico in tandem too much. But at the same time, if we're not going to see Rodri three times a week, he's got to be the guy that steps up. Because, I mean, Kovacic isn't a player without his qualities, and I think he's a guy that will definitely get minutes once he's back up to speed. Guardiola likes him, but I think we all saw Kovacic playing as a lone holder last season, and I think for all the things people disagree about last season, that's probably one a lot of people agree on, that it's maybe it has its flaws flaws that aren't really going to go away. So, he's kind of got the Calvin Phillips role, hasn't he, of being Rodri's backup, but it's Rodri's backup after an ACL surgery, and I think for all the fears that he could end up being the Spanish Calvin, I think this week has shown there's a lot more to it than that, that he is quite good. He's shown, I certainly thought at times against Burnley, he was the guy trying to sort of drive it and get the tempo up when they had those slack periods. We saw in Rodri's first 18 months at City that position in a Guardiola team, especially if he's playing it with, to use the tactics parlance, with 2 8s ahead of him, ahead of the six. I know there are listeners who hate that sort of number shit, so I'm sorry. but when you're playing that way, it's hard to sort of get all that stuff. But he's I think he made loads of progress before he gave away an 89th minute penalty, but you know, them's the breaks.
Yeah.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
If Rodri needs to be managed a lot better. And I would argue playing 50-odd games in a season is probably not ideal. Like Nico this week has certainly shown that if he's not there yet, he's not actually that far off being what City need.
Not at all, no. I really like him. I really think he's a good player. You know, he's not Rodri, obviously. Nobody is. He's never going to be quite as imperious in the middle as Rodri has been and still is on his best days. But I think he's a more than able deputy and I feel confident when he plays. I think he really contributes to the attacking play as well with some nice passes and, you know, he's just good at kind of winning the ball back and keeping things tidy as well. So yeah, I feel confident with him. Like, as Dom said, a lot more confident than would be having Kovacic in that position. I would kind of like to see at some point him playing alongside Rodri in midfield, Nico, I mean, just to see what that looks like. But again, you probably do sacrifice a little bit of an attacking intent. And I think Reinders has been very hot and cold so far, but I thought he was pretty good against Monaco and looks like he's kind of finding his feet a little bit more now. Interesting to see what happens when Cherki comes back as well, where he'll slot into it, whether he'll be used out wide on the right, perhaps, like cutting inside, like the kind of Bernardo role was, or maybe whether he'll play in the middle and what that would mean for Nico, especially if Rodri can stay fit. But yeah, like Rodri got a stamp on his foot in the Monaco game, didn't he? I don't know if that's completely why he came off, but he looked like he was hobbling a little bit when he came off and obviously was out injured with pain in his knee at the weekend.
Guardiola did say it was nothing to do with injury after the game. But
right,
then,
okay.
Guardiola, he's not normally one to lie about those sorts of things. So, he might be lying, but I think we can take him at face value for this.
Yeah. They've just got to be careful with him, haven't they? And it's just good to know that they've got a really good fallback option now, I think. And Calvin Phillips is still there, of course, as well. So who knows? Maybe he'll get used at some point. I very much doubt it, but you never know.
Yeah. I also want to talk about Foden, Dan, because there's a lot of is he back to his best sort of chats, which I don't really want to get into because there's a very clear answer, really. But he's been very good recently.
Superb, yeah. He looks like he's just got that confidence back, hasn't he? He's just playing with a smile on his face again. He looks like the weight of the world's been lifted off his shoulders. He looks like he's having fun out there. And it's just when he's in that kind of mood, it's so fun to watch him. Had a couple of complaints about him against Monaco where there was just a couple of opportunities to sort of release the ball that he didn't take or, you know, just
final ball,
slightly,
just get it through. Yeah.
Yeah. Slightly trying to thread the needle and not quite managing it. Hit the bar with a shot with his right foot, which would have been a great goal. Don't see him shooting with his right foot very often. And yeah, I think there's still a little bit of patience required with him. I don't think he is quite fully back to his best yet. And by his best, I mean probably that sort of run towards the end of the season before last when he won the PFA award. But he's getting there. You know, I'd like to see him scoring a few more goals. He's not really chipped in with, what is it? Has he got one, two this season? Yeah, just one. So, you know, he needs to be adding that to his game again. He needs to be finishing off those passes and just improving that link-up play a little bit more. But it's just really encouraging to see the leaps and bounds he's made this season, I think, yeah.
I'm lying, actually. He's got two goals.
Huddersfield in it as well. Yeah.
It's literally in the next bit of the show and I'm right here looking at it and I still said one. So,
How many is he going to have by the end of the podcast?
Dom, you mentioned it before, the spin. Dan mentioned it before, the spin when he receives the ball. That was happening every 5 minutes against Monaco. It's like, I can't explain. Like, it just makes my tummy feel really nice.
No, there was a point, because there was one in the middle of all that I know the period of the game you're talking about, where he actually missed the drag and he didn't take it with him. It was like there was kind of a glitch in the Matrix sort of thing that he didn't do that. But I agree. It's one of those things you see that he's doing that you think everything's just right in his game and those little sharp bits are back that sort of were a bit blunted and dulled last season. I was during last season, actually, I was speaking to one of the guys who was one of the youth coaches when Foden was coming through. He was talking about the way that how he receives the ball, and he was saying that like he basically did that when he was 8 years old. And this guy was saying, to be fair to himself as a coach, there's no way he taught him that. That was the thing he had, and it was like you then just have to sort of like put them in situations in training where you facilitate that.
The most humble former coach that's ever spoken in the press.
Yeah. It was to give me his due. It was Steve Eyre, actually, so fair play to him. Could be listening. But yeah, it's like that sort of innate thing is always there. So with that in mind, when you see Foden doing that, when he's doing like just those innate things, it shows he's in a good place, and he's like, his game's really flowing nicely in a way that for various reasons it wasn't last year. So yeah, he's just one of the best players around anywhere to watch when he's like that. So long may it continue.
Yeah, let's touch on the goals, Dan, though, before we finish, because Haaland, brace against Burnley, brace against Monaco, he has been imperious at the start of this season. However, when you read the numbers out in all competitions this season, it's 11 goals for Haaland, 2 for Foden and own goals by opponents, and then 1 for Cherki, Doku, Nunes, Reinders and Savinho. It kind of feels like they, just in case Haaland doesn't quite have his shooting boots with him, which hasn't been the case yet this season, but just in case he forgets to bring them one week, it might be nice for a few others to step up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, firstly on Haaland, yeah, imperious is a great word to describe him. He's been super. I think he's been our best player this season, actually. Not just his goals, but his all-round link-up play, you know, it's really improved and he's really putting a shift in and really carried himself like a leader in the team, I think, which has been really great to see. And, you know, I hope that continues and I hope he keeps scoring goals. But definitely, yeah, we need to see a few more goals coming from elsewhere. And you do kind of worry about where they're going to come from a little bit. You know, Reinders sort of started the season looking like he'd have, you know, something to do with that, like, you know, scoring against Wolves, even scoring that hat-trick against Palermo in the friendly. Hasn't scored since. He hit the bar against Monaco as well, unfortunately. And then you've got Doku, who has also played really well, but is never going to be a prolific goal scorer, I don't think. Same with Savinho. Same with everybody, really. You know, maybe that is the reason I think Marmoush was brought in January to add some more goals to the team, and obviously hasn't scored yet and been out injured. So you kind of hope that he can chip in a little bit more when he comes back. Foden as well, like we said, needs to be scoring a few more goals. But yeah, it's a bit of a problem, I think, that it is very top-heavy when it comes to Haaland and there is an over-reliance on him. And I just don't really know what the short-term solution to that is, except just sort of hoping that some more of these shots fly in instead of hitting the bar or flying wide, to be honest.
What I will say for Foden, Dom, is in the Burnley game, if Estevez doesn't pop that in, Foden is obviously going to pop that in instead. And if Estevez doesn't pop the second one in, then Bob's going to pop it in instead.
Yeah, I think certainly with Foden, if he's fit and on form all season, he's a guy that will just score about 20 goals a season. It's what he does. And I think that's a key thing, that like there is... You have players who have their kind of mean number of goals they will get. Like there'd be times when you thought Riyad Mahrez hadn't had his best season, but he was always between 15 and 20 goals. And from that treble team, you think Mahrez, Alvarez and the treble version of Gundogan, that was a lot of goals taken out of the team that weren't really replaced. Obviously, there's De Bruyne. You talk about De Bruyne's assists, but he was always good for double figures as well. Bernardo doesn't score as much as he did. So I think there's been an attempt to replace that. I think Foden's goals will take care of themselves. I think Doku's improvement suggests there's more to come from him in that regard. Also, this has been more something I've thought, like they've not had a lot to change it off the bench lately, but Marmoush and Cherki both been injured at the same time. I think the idea is that they'll... You know, they're both guys who, in their previous clubs, and Marmoush to an extent with City last season, weigh in with decent numbers. Just so long as they're playing, they do get goals and assists. So I don't think it'll look quite as extreme as it does at the moment. But the other side of that is, I had a colleague who was talking about a tactics podcast he listened to that was saying that Haaland, I think after the Arsenal game, Haaland was on something like, he'd taken 44% of City's shots, which is absurdly high. Like, for example, when Messi was in his prime at Barcelona, he was like taking 20-odd%. So it's a lot. But, I mean, I think Haaland is... When you've got a guy like Haaland in there, there's always going to be an extreme to the numbers to an extent, because this is a guy who 40-plus goals feels like his par. It's like... A lot of people would say he's had poor seasons. The last 2 seasons, and he's broken 30 goals. You know, he did. There was a thing Joleon Lescott said last night, actually, where it got mentioned on the broadcast on TNT that he was on good form. And Lescott said, form is a thing that like comes and goes and you have peaks and troughs in it. I think this is just what he is. Which I thought was actually a really good point. So, yeah, it's... those numbers you presented there and the ones I got told about with all the shots Haaland takes are pretty startling, but it is a small sample size this stage in season. I do think with Foden, Marmoos, Cherki, and hopefully Reinders and Doku as well, it should take care of itself a little bit.
Yeah. Can I give you another Haaland stat that I saw around the game last night? And it was, it's a Premier League stat. It's not a, it's not a, an overall performances stat. He's been offside 6 times in the Premier League. That's it. Which is like, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, he's really good, isn't it? And it, it kind of, Marmoush has kind of underlined that since he showed up, because bless him, he's not the most adept to stay on the side, is he? he's a little bit closer to the old Darren Huckabee end of the spectrum on that side. So, and it's not great for him to be playing next to the robot who's never offside. So
yeah,
that's hopefully he can smooth that out a little bit.
Yeah, mad numbers all over the shop. Well, with his 2 goals on Saturday, Erling Haaland became the highest scoring Norwegian in the Premier League. I know what you're thinking, David, have there been any other countries for which the highest scoring player in the Premier League has played for City? The answer is, of course, yes. Here they are. Now the highest scoring Norwegian in the Premier League with 93 goals, Erling Haaland has overtaken Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and he's done it in 132 fewer appearances. He's still some way off Alan Shearer's Premier League record though, but it must now be in his sights, and breaking that would obviously make him City's all-time top scorer too. For the other City players who are their country's leading Premier League scorer, we start with the man whose record Haaland is chasing down. No Argentinian has a better Premier League tally than Sergio Aguero's 184. Here he is speaking to Sky Sports during the title celebrations of 2021 and after his final 2 goals for City.
My last game, but I'm so happy and I'm enjoying a lot. So I want to say thanks to my teammates, because my teammates has helped a lot, so thank you for everything, you know?
To score 2 goals today and to become the all-time record holder of the most goals at a Premier League club, what does that mean to you?
I don't know, so normally I'm a striker. My target is to score goals, so I'm so happy because finally, you know, my last game is
in terms of total Premier League goals, nobody else on this list comes close to Aguero. Despite being their country's leading scorers, only 2 players get near to the 100 mark, and both of them are from African countries. Riyad Mahrez is the leading Algerian scorer with 82 in the Premier League, roughly half for City and half for Leicester, while Emmanuel Adebayor is Togo's top scorer. He got 15 for City and 97 in the Premier League in total. Here he is, apologising in an interview with Sky for his celebration after one of his most famous City goals.
I could have not do what I have done, but you know, it's like the emotion I take over me. The frustration is out of me. It was, I feel sorry for what I have done. But you know, as a player, we just focus on what you're doing and, you know, scoring the way people judge me for what I have done and for what I have not think of doing. Scoring goals again today make me feel free in my body, and I think I'd do a little bit more of what I have to do, but you know, I'm very sorry for doing what I have done. And you know, and we are all human beings. We have to do a mistake to be better tomorrow. I have done a big mistake today, and I think tomorrow this thing will never happen anymore.
Along with Mahrez and Adebayor, there is one other African City player to be their country's top scorer. Only one of his 4 goals came for City, with 3 for Chelsea, but no Liberian has scored more in the Premier League than George Weah. Here's Dan Burke talking about when City signed him on the podcast.
I remember my dad waking me up in the school holidays and saying, Dan, City have signed George Weah. And I just could not believe what I was hearing. And then he showed me the paper to prove it. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I mean, obviously, when he signed for City, he was at the tail end of his career. But like a lot of sort of 90s kids, I'd grown up watching Football Italia on Channel 4. And the image that always sticks in your mind of George Weah is that amazing end-to-end goal that he scored for AC Milan. So I was like, oh, you know, we were signing this brilliant player.
Now, Weah never scored a Premier League goal against City, but both Mahrez and Adebayor did. There is a third former City player that is against their country's leading scorer, who also scored for and against the club. And we're going back to South America. Paraguay's Roque Santa Cruz got 26 Premier League goals, three of them in a blue shirt. When he joined from Blackburn, he told reporters what he wanted to achieve.
There is, of course, the main idea of the owners and the CAFA to bring the club as far as possible. So I think everybody is expecting a lot, and that the fact that they are signing big players, good, great players, is also the meaning that we want to get as good as possible. So I think that everybody is talking about breaking the top four. So once we get there, we need to keep looking forward and see what's the best we can get.
Moving north from Paraguay, roughly 3,000 miles north and a little bit to the west as well, we get to Costa Rica. The majority of Paulo Wanchope's Premier League goals came away from City, but he did get 15 of his 50 for the club. No Costa Rican has more in the English top flight. Also on a total of 50 is the leading scorer from Bosnia and Herzegovina, and all of them were for City. Years after he left, Edin Dzeko was asked by TNT Sports if he knew what he meant to the fans.
You know, it's difficult to speak, you know. I haven't been there for like 8 years, and we were a big part of, let's say, the beginning of the City era, let's say, which was the most important, I think. And I know that I meant a lot to the club and the fans.
Hop over the border from Bosnia and Herzegovina and you get to another country whose top Premier League scorer got them all in a City shirt. Montenegro's Stevan Jovetic scored 8 times in the league. He spoke to City TV after his first, which came in a 5-1 win at Tottenham.
I think it was a great, great game tonight. First half also we played very well. Unfortunately we scored just one goal, but then in the second we scored more 4. And we could score more, and then I'm so happy because I had, like, you know, so many bad things behind me, but I was always positive, believe in myself, and I knew that I'm gonna play good and help to the guys.
Staying in Europe, the leading German Premier League scorer got all 45 of his goals for City as well. 44 came in Ilkay Gundogan's first spell, with just one coming after his year at Barcelona. He spoke to City TV on his return.
When you leave this place, like I did last year, you spend a year away, you know, you then start to appreciate the place even more, you know. You realize what you had. You realize how amazing that time was. You realize how big the club is, the best club in the world. I think in terms of football, you know, getting back onto that level and coming back now a year later is an incredible, incredible feeling. And I am very pleased. I'm very happy. I feel privileged, you know, to share the dressing room again with these amazing players.
Gundogan is the only midfielder who's on this list. Meanwhile, the only defender is also the only player from an Asian country. Sun Jihai is the leading Premier League scorer from China, and despite a 6-year career at City, all 3 of his goals came away from home in a 10-month period between 2002 and 2003. And one of Sun's teammates during that time is not only the leading Premier League scorer from his country, but he's also the only Premier League scorer from his country. Step forward, club legend from Bermuda, Sean Gota. He spoke to The Guardian in 2015 about his first top-flight game.
There's a lot of nerves before the game as you're walking on the pitch, but the nerves go once the game starts, you know, because that's your normality. That's where you belong. That's what you do. So that's where the calmness starts to settle in when the game, the whistle goes and the game is kicked off.
Can you remember who your first game in the Premier League was against?
I'm sitting there thinking it was Everton, but I think Everton may have been my first Premier League goal.
I think Everton was your first Premier League goal.
Yeah, so not... Yeah. Oh, I should have remembered that.
Yeah, you should.
Should remember your debut, don't I?
So that is all 11 of the other players who have been at City and are their country's leading scorer in the Premier League. Haaland has now become the 12th and the 4th European player as he becomes the top flight's highest scoring Norwegian. All 12 players have scored a total of 655 goals, with 473 of them coming for City. Meanwhile, thanks to Adebayor, Santa Cruz and Mahrez, a grand total of 7 of them have been conceded by City instead.
Hi, this is Sean Gutter, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we move on, a nice eclectic mix of players there from City's Premier League era. Any particularly great goals that you remember from any of these guys? I mean, like Dan, we've spoken about George Weah like at length on a previous podcast. His one Premier League goal at Anfield. I still remember the commentary to it on Match of the Day, where the commentator says, "There's magic in those boots still," and I was like, "Yes, there is," and then there wasn't.
I was there for that.
Were you?
You were there.
A family friend had and this isn't me doing generic Liverpool stuff. Like corporate tickets in like the Carlsberg Lounge or something. Like you sat in the middle tier of their main stand. And my main memory that day is it assured us that if City score, you can celebrate. It's like, really? but I might have give it slightly big, two bigger beans one way has scored. Decided that you probably can't celebrate to that extent, really.
Yeah.
That was good. Kevin Horlock penalty as well. I mean, George, as far as eras collide in that period of City goal, George Weah pulling one back and then Kevin Horlock knocking the penalty in is pretty cool. But then Didier Mann screaming in a winner from miles away.
Yeah.
Good game.
Yeah. Was Weah wearing yellow boots in that game that made his feet look like bananas? In my mind's eye, when I think of George Weah playing for City, he's wearing yellow boots. Yeah.
I do remember when he came over to Chelsea, he was one of the first players to wear white boots, which was a very much of its time, a game's gone situation.
Mm, yeah.
I think Martin Keown did that as well, which was a bizarrely flattering move for.
Didn't Alan Ball wear white boots in like the 1960s or something?
I mean, even though I was at Anfield in 2000 with George Weah, I'm not that old.
Genuinely one of my all-time favourite City signings. And even, like, we've got, not to spoiler ahead too much in the podcast, but the photo shoot that they did at the start of that season with Lara Croft. We have Lara Croft coming on the podcast a bit later on in the season. Just an absolutely mad time. I don't know if the other one that sticks out from that season, because it was a pretty poor season overall, but Paolo Wanchope scoring a back heel at Leicester. You're probably there for that as well, were you, Dom?
I wasn't, no. I'm afraid not. The things you remember about these games. I was in town and I was listening to it on a Walkman. the old GMR.
Yeah.
Times.
Yeah. Any for you, Dan, that stand out? Any particular players that...
Sun Ji-hai scoring three goals and being China's leading scorer is pretty interesting, I suppose, isn't it?
They were all three of them were in the space of like 10 months. It was like really quick succession that he got them all.
I want to say West Brom away, Sun Ji-hai scored.
Birmingham away.
Yeah. Was it also Birmingham away where he gave a penalty away later in his career that was a bit dodgy? But
Well, he got shoulder charged by Gary McSheffrey.
That's right.
Went, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sunderland away, one of them, Sun Ji-hai.
It was, 3-0. I think 3-0 in 2002. Foye and Gota got the others, and then to complete the set, Charlton away on the opening day in 03 or 04.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, the forgotten Charlton away on the opening day.
Yeah, the good one.
the one that was a total car crash. Yeah,
yeah. Ilkay Gundogan as well. That's Germany's top scorer. Scored only one of his Premier League goals in his second spell, which was his final Premier League game.
Lovely goal that as well.
Lovely
wasn't
goal
it?
At Fulham. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there you go.
It's becoming a bit of a thing, isn't it, about people saying that German players are not suitable for the Premier League with Wirtz struggling a little bit at the moment. But Gundogan's definitely the exception to that rule, isn't he? He was pretty much fire throughout. Fair play
to the lad. A couple of them scored against City as well. Emmanuel Adebayor did it for Arsenal. Roque Santa Cruz did it for Blackburn. Riyad Mahrez did it for Leicester. But the bulk of their... Santa Cruz and Adebayor, the bulk of their goals came away from City. The bulk of Mahrez's goals just came for City. You got about 50-50 between Leicester and City. So there's I just find this sort of stuff really fascinating. Sorry to bore everybody about it,
can that be the bulk when it's that close?
I mean your football let's
say the bulk of people voted for Brexit. can of worms there for them.
Yeah, keep it light.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think
let's talk about existentialism again.
I think bulk is kind of a 70 or 80% kind of scenario. But I tell you what, those Santa Cruz and Adebayor ratios, good sum of that. Well done.
Yeah.
Good signings.
Yeah, indeed. Final one to shout out, because we can't mention top goal scorers and not mention City's actual record goal scorer in Sergio Aguero with a 184, kind of best Argentinian the Premier League has seen in terms of goals. And
any of his stand out?
Any of his stand out? Like, I mean,
in the Premier League?
In the Premier League, one or two top ones. I mean, I always find it difficult with Aguero because obviously, like, that goal against QPR is like obviously the all-time high goal, but it's not actually a great goal, is it? It's like it just belts it really hard from the middle of the goal.
Oh, I don't know. It's a very good goal.
Unlike pressure and everything else, yes.
The pressure coming back to get the ball, playing the 1-2, creating the angle. Once he'd got it round Taiwo, it feels like a formality. And then, of course, he did that interview where he said he meant to go across the goalie, but he mishit it because he leathered it so hard. But all of the build-up is like, I don't know, it's not straightforward, that.
But is that better than the one against Watford where he dribbled it through everyone, then chipped it into the back post? Or is it better than the one against Chelsea where he just belted it in from 30 yards?
My favourite Aguero goal would be the one at Norwich when him and Tevez just like 1-2 it down the pitch and then he tans it into the top corner. That was like sort of like, you know, the two best kids on the playground just messing about sort of goal. That was brilliant.
Yeah, he was all right, wasn't he, Aguero? When you think about it, it's funny as well, Dan. That I always like when you think of what Guardiola's doing with Haaland and basically saying no, he just stays there and scores the goals. It doesn't matter if he touches the ball, and that's literally what he nearly shipped Aguero out for doing. It's like, just funny, isn't it?
Yeah, the bald hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah. Any favourites for you that we've not mentioned?
The Chelsea one immediately sprung to mind. Yeah, I really liked his record clinching one against Napoli as well.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best goal, but it just felt like a historic moment that I remember. Yeah. Well, it was, I suppose. But yeah, what a play
in Maradona Stadium as well. It's such a cool thing for him to do it there.
Beautiful. Right, so let's talk about Brentford then. City now unbeaten in six, four wins, two draws. The general trend, as we've said in their performances, is that they're much more stable than they were for most of last season. How does this one go then, Dan?
I think it could be a tricky game. I mean, Brentford haven't had a great season so far. Obviously, they beat United last week, but that's not saying much, is it, really? I think it's kind of funny that we're playing them after this Monaco game, because the game at Brentford last season went kind of similar to the Monaco one, you know, albeit a sort of different period in time for City, but City played really well that night and it felt really encouraging. It felt like they were sort of getting back to something, and then they conceded a late equaliser. And we're going into the game with Brentford again now, having come off a game like that where you know, I'm hoping the way that City will approach this is with a bit of anger after the way that that Monaco game went. I think, you know, there was a lot of frustration in kind of the post-match stuff from Pep and some of the players about the way that they weren't able to get the win over the line. And you sort of hope that they'll take some lessons from that and just go into this game feeling pretty fired up. And, you know, I think Brentford are going to look to get men behind the ball and hit City on the break. And that has been problematic for us over time, but I think if they play anything like they did against Monaco, then they should have a good chance of getting a win, really. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tricky game. You know, Sunday, late kickoff on a Sunday, it's, you know, can sometimes be quite difficult, but I think, you know, we've got reasons to be confident going into this one, yeah.
Yeah. Does anything need to change, Dom, structure-wise, from the last few weeks? Because, like, Savinho might need more minutes if he's got any chance of stepping up to a level that City need him to be at. But at the same time, you kind of feel like Doku needs the consistency to keep his good start to the season going. You mentioned it before, people haven't been happy with Bernardo on the right, but maybe you don't get Foden's performance if Bernardo isn't doing the job that he's doing there. And if you want Foden against anyone, it's Brentford. He has a bloody good record against them.
I think on your Savinho point, I mean, does he need to play better to get minutes? I think you can view that in two different ways, really.
The good old freelancer paradox, yeah. What's your rate? What's your budget? What's your rate? What's your budget?
What's your rate, Tottenham? So with Savinho, I think, and I might be in a minority here, I think he's still better on the left wing. He had that period in the middle of the last season where he like got a bit of a stack of assists for Haaland. He got that really good assist where he ran all the way around the fullback against West Ham from the left side. I'm far from convinced with him, but as a right winger, just because he wears Riyad Mahrez's number, I mean, that's kind of where it begins and ends at the minute for me. I mean, has he got the touch? Has he got the sense of goal? The decision making qualities? Nope.
Yeah. But, you can't just wear the Riyad Mahrez number and suddenly expect to be the top scorer for Algeria in the Premier League.
Absolutely not. be folly. So. Yeah, I'm that right side is really wide open. I mean, I don't think anyone, if you'd said to someone in the summer that by the start of October, the right flank will be John Stones behind Bernardo Silva. Which does kind of show the state of flux they're in there. But I think Savinho got his chance against Burnley and was like, all right. So I'd maybe sooner see if they need to move things around a bit there. And I think he is going to freshen things up a little bit. I think it's maybe time for Oscar Bob to have another start. In terms of then who plays at right back, which, you know, is kind of, you know, rolled up, whose goal is it this week? But Rico Lewis does, I mean, I know Guardiola will mention him being small if he comes up in a press conference, because he has to. Not his fault. Just he does seem to link quite well with Bob, like whenever they play in tandem down that side. So I wouldn't mind seeing that if the basis of a team seems to be settling down now, but the right flank is up for grabs. So maybe Lewis and Bob this weekend. On Doku, I'd definitely like to see him keep playing, because it's been such a stop-start career for him. Obviously, part of that stop-start career has been he's suffered quite a lot of muscular injuries, so obviously the medical staff will be all over that. If he was to lose rhythm now by like doing his thigh, that'd be really annoying. But if he was to like just get rotated out every weekend, they had a Champions League game and his form went because of that, I think that'd be a bit of an on goal. So yeah, I'd be more than happy to see Doku, Foden and Haaland to try and keep grooving what it looks like they're building up from.
Yeah, Dan, John got in touch to say, do we think that Doku will continue his current form this season, or is it just a temporary uplift? And like the concern is always that it would be a temporary uplift, but the body of work is getting longer and longer and longer for this season for Doku, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he's one, a little bit like I said with Haaland before, where what I've noticed and been impressed with Doku this season is that he's taking more responsibility, I think. He's getting the ball, and instead of kind of running down a blind alley or hoping that someone's going to come and kind of bail him out or trying to put a cross in that just hits the opposing defender's shins or something, he's got his head up and he's thinking, right, I want to do something positive here. I want to keep hold of the ball and we're going to go for goal and we're going to try and create something here. And it looks like he's sort of gaining in confidence at every game as well. You know, the movement he did for the assist for Foden against United was brilliant. The goal against Napoli was brilliant. And then just his work rate is absolutely phenomenal, I think, and the way he battles for the ball. You know, he's probably one of our sort of hardest battling players, I would say. So it's really looking good at the moment. And yeah, there is a bit of a concern that it would be a flash in the pan, or like Dom said, that he gets disrupted by an injury. But for the way he's playing at the moment, the form he's in, the confidence he's in, I think just keep playing him, just keep getting him out there, keep getting him on the ball, running at defenders. You know, he's just going to hopefully improve and keep getting better. And that would be, you know, he'd be one of the first names on the team sheet for me at the moment, basically, because I think he's been, you know, aside from Haaland, probably City's best player this year.
Been baptised as well, so he can have
That's
a chat
right,
to
yeah.
Erling about existentialism. Yeah. Don't worry, mate, it's fine.
Dan, does City have a problem? We kind of skirted around this a bit earlier, but does City have a problem with conceding late goals at the moment, especially away from home? Brighton, Arsenal and Monaco all scored crucial game-changing goals after 89 minutes.
Well, when you put it like that, yeah, I suppose they do, yeah. I mean, the Brighton one, the Brighton game was just a bit of a, that last sort of half hour was a bit of a shambles, wasn't it, really? And, you know, the way that the game turned with the penalty and then, you know, City were just quite poor, really, just kind of like drifted through that game a little bit, I think. The Arsenal one was a bit of a special case where they were just clinging on for dear life and, you know, weren't, didn't
quite
really
cling
have,
on for long enough, yeah.
Yeah, didn't really have much ambition to go get a second goal. You know, it was going to be 1-0 or 1-1 as far as City were concerned that game, I think, really. And it ended up being 1-1 thanks to a really sort of well-worked goal by Arsenal, I'd say. So I don't think there's an awful lot they can do about that. And the Monaco one, kind of a similar story. Like I said earlier, they should have put the game to bed, but they almost did. You know, we're unlucky not to do so with the woodwork being rattled and then a very contentious penalty going against them. So
when you say it like that, though, it doesn't sound like they have a problem. It sounds like there's been three instances and the sample size is really small.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. But then you sort of, you know, it's about getting into positions where you don't have to worry about a contentious penalty going against you or a wonder goal being scored against you. You need to get into comfortable positions where you're sort of 3-4-1 up, like they were against Burnley at the weekend, basically, where you just get the goals and you can relax for the last 10-15 minutes of the game and not put yourself into those precarious positions where something random could happen and suddenly all the good work has been undone, which was the case against Monaco, unfortunately. And like I said, it was a real shame. But yeah, I think it's not something that I have a huge concern about. I think probably with the way that the preseason basically didn't exist, probably City are quite not at the kind of fitness levels of some of the teams around them at the moment and are still getting up to speed a little bit. And maybe that's something that will come in time. But I think ultimately it's just about just taking your chances and putting games to bed when you're on top, basically.
Yeah. Dom, we talked about the midfield before as well, and Reinders is somebody that we've not really spoken about on today's show. He keeps playing in the way that, obviously, he's still learning things at City, but he's trusted by Guardiola to keep going into the team and keep doing that. Kovacic was on the bench for Monaco. He's probably not going to be the holder, as we discussed earlier. Is there scope that Guardiola might start to take a little bit of the pressure off Reinders in the next few weeks?
I don't know. It feels to me like he's made a call that Reinders, with all that he has in terms of his... He seems to be quite a well-rounded player in terms of his skill set. The way that he can like drive forward like he did on the assist for Haaland against Arsenal. He does provide a goal threat. He's physically, you know, can be, you know, I'd like to see him be more physically imposing, I think, in terms of second balls, duels and things like that. But he kind of does seem like he's the whole package, but there's lots of things to smooth off. And I think it feels like Guardiola's made a call that he's going to learn all that on the job. And,
yeah.
And the
in the same way that Rodri did in 2020.
Yeah, just that he's clearly going to be such an important part of things that they can't afford for it to be... You know, you have a couple of games and step out. And maybe he's one, I mean, I don't know, this is probably one to ask him in press conferences, actually, that Guardiola talks about that there are certain players that can play. Like he always said that Sterling could play every 2 or 3 days and he's recovered really well and others take longer. Maybe Reinders is one of those who physiologically just can go and go and go. So, yeah, there's obviously a hell of a player there. And, like, you know, the odd times I saw him for Milan and for the Netherlands over the last couple of years, I always thought he looked brilliant. So... I think, I think they are just going to play and play and play him as much as they can. And try and reap the rewards for that. Like once, as we were saying before, once all the rest of what this team is becoming settles down, then that's when he really flourishes.
Yeah. I did wonder, Dan, if he might be the position where Cherki would come in.
Maybe, yeah. And then play Cherki and Foden alongside each other in the middle. Yeah. That would be quite interesting. That would be very nice to see. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Reinders is going to, you know, I don't think anyone can expect to start every single game over the course of a season. So there's going to be a bit of rotation there. I like I said earlier, I think he has been warming up a little bit more in recent weeks and has been sort of fitting in with the patterns of play a little bit and just kind of understanding what's expected of him a little bit more. And I thought against Monaco, he was pretty good. So he's a player that I'm really, really enthused about and I want to see as much as possible of. And his adaptation wasn't quite as smooth as that debut suggested, unfortunately. But yeah, I think over time we're going to see him. We're going to really love him as a player.
Yeah, he's not Mangala'd it, has he? That's the,
no,
that's the key. That's the key thing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
Let's get a view of this game from the opposition. I've been speaking to Mike Johnston from the Ealing Road Podcast to get his thoughts on Brentford's start to the season under a new manager.
Yeah, I think going into the season, it's kind of easy looking in from the outside to feel like the house is falling down with losing the manager, the captain, 2 top scorers. But I think Keith Andrews has navigated the first kind of 5-6 games quite well. In the cup, we're through to the fourth round or fifth round, I want to say now. And there has been a certain degree of consistency to the performances. We've had a couple of shockers. The first day against Forest was a bit of a wake-up call, but Andrews responded well to that. And then we had a derby game against Fulham where we played terribly. And again, Andrews responded well to that by beating United at the weekend. The last game, I'm not sure how much we can take from because United are really, really bad. Which City fans will be very happy to hear about.
Yeah. You can't play donkeys every week, can you?
Exactly,
that's the thing.
Yeah. Exactly. We went into the game thinking we need a response from Fulham because Fulham was terrible. But we were good on Saturday, but I don't know how much you can take from it because I was shocked with how poor United were. So yeah, I would say Keith Andrews has done quite well. I don't think many Brentford fans were panicking too much before the start of the season. And yeah, Keith Andrews, he's made a decent start to life as Brentford manager, considering all of the change that's happened over the summer.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you mentioned those changes there. I mean, just to name a few, obviously lost Johan Wisser on the final day. Brian Abuemo to United, Christian Nørgaard to Arsenal. How have you, as a team, kind of coped without having such big upheaval?
It's difficult to know really yet, but people keep on asking me or have been asking me sort of, how do you think Brentford are going to do this season? And I've always said, until you're 8, 9, 10 games into the season, you're not really going to know. In terms of the people that have gone out, I think there was a like-for-like swap bringing Jordan Henderson in for Christian Nørgaard. And a lot of people, again, were kind of thinking, is 35-year-old Jordan Henderson the answer to Brentford's problems? And replacing such a prominent figure like Christian Nørgaard, who's arguably been Brentford's most important player over the last 6 or 7 years, to then bring in a veteran like Jordan Henderson, everyone was kind of, there was a few question marks over that. But again, the sensible Brentford fans, I would like to think, were saying, well, Brentford would have done their due diligence on Jordan Henderson to check that he could still do it at this level. And we have been massively, massively enthused by his performances because he's been a really good ideal Christian Norgaard replacement. And they're very similar. They're level raisers. They make people around them better. They always want the ball. They know when to go long. And it's a useful tool for Keith Andrews as well, going into his first job in management, to have someone like Jordan Henderson around. In terms of the other departures, we've brought in Dango Ouattara as a Brian Mbeumo replacement. We've brought in Rhys Nelson, who's not featured yet too much. He featured in the cup for 5 or 10 minutes against Villa. But yeah, so those are the two like-for-like replacements for Mbeumo and Wissa. But I think the main one is Thomas Frank. And that was where I think the uncertainty amongst Brentford fans and maybe the wider kind of football fan base extended from, because Thomas Frank has been a constant at Brentford over the last 6 or 7 years. And when you think of Brentford, you think of Thomas Frank, and now he's doing such a great job at Tottenham. Maybe he's that kind of special manager that we all thought he was. So it's difficult to know how we've coped with that change just yet. But I think from the way people were talking about us at the start of the season going into it, it sounded like we were dead certs for relegation. I don't think we're going to be there. And I've consistently said that from the start of the season up until now. I just think there are worse teams in this league. And whilst it does look like it's going to be competitive, with the three promoted teams looking like they're a lot better than they were in the seasons gone by, I just think there's enough quality in our side with the injuries that we have coming back from long-term injuries. You see in the fruits of kind of Igor Thiago's fitness, who was brought in as the Ivan Toney replacement. Aaron Hickey's back, Rico Henry's back. We've got all these players that haven't featured for Brentford for the best part of 2 years, really, who are now kind of making their mark on the team. And we've strengthened in the areas that we need to strengthen. I actually think our squad is in one of the better places it's been since we've been in the Premier League, despite having lost so many crucial aspects of it over the summer.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the manager, as you say, is a big change there. What's Keith Andrews done in terms of continuity? Has he kept things as similar as they were under Frank, or is he kind of going in his direction?
Well, in my opinion, it would have been a mistake to kind of rip up the playbook, because he's seen firsthand kind of the things that have made Thomas Frank successful at Brentford over the last 6 years. He worked under him as a set piece coach, and now he's obviously the manager. But if he came in and kind of said, this is the style of football I'm going to play and I'm not going to adapt, then I think a lot of Brentford fans would have turned on him a lot quicker. There are a lot of Brentford fans already, even after the Fulham game, that were thinking he's out of his depth. But we're a fickle bunch, and I think a lot of those worries were forgotten about when we beat United on Saturday. But yeah, in terms of Andrews' football, I mean, we've seen the same kind of tactical flexibility that Thomas Frank showcased in terms of playing with the back five against the better teams, setting up against the back four against the teams that we think we can beat. Sometimes he's got that wrong. I think he needed to go with a four at Fulham, and then he went with a four against Man United. So I think that's where he sees them potentially, and we managed to run all over them. But yeah, we're seeing, I think it's too early to say there's like an Andrews ball. I've not seen Andrews ball yet. I don't want to say, because I think it's a bit too early. But there are certain patterns of play. We look a lot more like 22, 23 Brentford than I think we did last season. I think under Thomas Frank last season, I think he saw that as a season where we've bedded in now. We're an established Premier League club. Let's go back to the football that we were playing in the Championship, which was expansive, ball along the ground a lot more. The goalkeeper touched the ball and we sort of baited the press and we'd build through the thirds with quite intricate play. Whereas now we've reverted back. I think that's a bit of a concern with Brentford fans. But once we made this appointment, I think it was always going to be a kind of reset this season. Hmm. But we reverted back to going a little bit more direct. And I do think we're more equipped this season to beat the better teams than we are the worst teams, if that makes sense. But as City fans will know, we had a lot of joy against big teams in 22-23. We did the double over City, we beat Man United, we beat Tottenham, we beat Liverpool, we beat all these great sides. And it was actually the games where we came up against opposition close to ourselves where we fell down a little bit and maybe prevented us from nicking a European spot that season. So yeah, I think he's not changed a lot. I think we've probably gone back a couple of seasons in terms of our playing style. But for me, if we can get results over some of the bigger teams in the league this season, I've got no problem with that.
Yeah, if it works, what's the problem?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, how do you think he'll approach this weekend then? Because as you say, if you go back towards that 22-23 style, like Guardiola didn't specifically say this about Brentford, but he said this about teams that play in that way in the past. Like, it's like going to the dentist. It's really hard to it's really hard to play against. Is that what you're expecting this weekend?
I don't know. I really don't know, because he's kind of kept us guessing, because when we've thought he should go to a five, he's gone to a four and it's been the opposite. So I don't know. I feel like if because it went well for us against Man United in a four, he may set up in a four against City. But I would still think that the level of the gulf in quality between United and City is so big that, in my opinion, it's going to be a game where you're going to have a lot more possession. And with a front two of Kevin Schrader and Igor Thiago, and if we sit in that low block and we win our duels in and around the penalty area, we're going to have outlets if City are really pushed up on us. So it's difficult to call. I would still suggest going into a back five and kind of setting up the way we did against Chelsea. We had a lot of joy against Chelsea when we played them at home. And kind of feeding off those scraps in and around the area, having the Willem runners in beyond, and then playing it to those runners very, very fast, which Jordan Henderson can do. I think if you look at Jordan Henderson's assist for Schrader against Chelsea and you look at Jordan Henderson's assist for Igor Thiago against United, they're carbon copies of each other. We win the ball back, Igor Thiago and Kevin Schrader just spin off the last defender and we're in on goal, basically. So I think there could be a lot of joy for Brentford in those situations, but I don't know. It's too early to predict with Andrews. There's not really been a level of consistency in terms of the formation yet. And like I say, we're still only six games into the season. So I don't know, David. That's the answer.
Excellent. I like not answering questions on podcasts. It's what people want to hear. You've done well at home, not so well away, just looking at your record, unbeaten at home, not taking a single point away from home. So I think the fact that this is at Brentford should be something that makes us think it's not necessarily going to be a simple day for City.
Yeah, well, we need to sort that away form out, to be honest. And I think, even in the games that we played Forest away, Sunderland away and Fulham away. In the Sunderland game, I thought it was a game that could have gone either way. And I actually think we played okay. And Sunderland, what, fourth now? So we don't really know how good Sunderland are going to be this season. So I didn't get too in the dumps about that result, because I just think it by the end of the game, it was one where we were really going for it and both teams could have come away with 3 points. But yeah, we do need to sort out that away form. And I think it's going to be massive for Keith Andrews once he gets one under the belt. Because if we're relying on our home form to get results all the time, it feels like we're a different side at home, which is kind of the story of last season as well. City fans might remember, they might not remember, but we didn't win an away game until December. But our home form was amazing. So, yeah, I mean, if we're going off the evidence that we have, I'd rather be playing you at the GTEC right now. But yeah, it's definitely important for us to kind of balance out that home form and away form as the season goes on.
Yeah, who's playing well at the moment? Who, if you are going to take the points, who will be the players that do it?
Jordan Henderson has for me been the standout so far, and I know that might come as a shock, but he's been so good. He's been the things that he offers, especially because we've got a really young team this season with a really young manager as well. I think the leadership on the pitch, he never stops talking, ever stops talking. He's always talking to those around him. And we've got young players in midfield like Juho Jamoliuk, who's been really, really good this season. A lot of Brentford fans are tipping him to have like a Damsgaard-esque season this season as Damsgaard had last season. So he's been really impressive as well. Obviously, Damsgaard's the one where he makes things happen. Everything kind of goes through him. And he's started the season really well too. And then in terms of our attacking options, Igor Thiago is one that people won't really know about because he was brought in as the Ivan Toney replacement and then spent the whole of last season injured. And he's scored 4 goals. I think only Haaland scored more than him this season. He scored 2 against Man United at the weekend. One of them was a really amazing finish and another one was really good centre forward play. So those have been the standouts for me so far this season. Defensively, we've looked okay. Michael Kayode is a right back that I think has a really big future in the game, but he just needs to iron out kind of subtleties in his game. And then there's another one, Aaron Hickey, who's recently returned from long-term injury. And he scored an absolute worldie against Villa in the League Cup. And then he started against Man United at the weekend for his first Premier League start in almost 2 years. And he really impressed too. So this is what I mean. I think we've replaced pretty well. And we've got players coming back from injury. And we've got a front line that's scoring goals. So I think that's a recipe for success. But yeah, those would be my standouts.
Yeah, I'm a lot more nervous about this game than I was 24 hours ago now, I'm not going to lie. Let's get a score prediction. We've got the charity bet coming up. I mean, thank God I don't have to predict this one because from like everything you've just said, nobody really knows what's going to happen. So over to you, Walt. So what do we have for this one?
I'm going to go score draw. I'm going to go 2-2. I think it might be a very similar game to the game we played against Chelsea at the GTEC a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I'm going to go 2-2.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Mike Johnston from the Ealing Road podcast. And another late goal robbed us of the first charity bet win of the season. But we go again as City go to Brentford this weekend. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City fans food bank support group. We heard that Mike has gone for a 2-2 draw. That is 12-1 and £120 if he is spot on with that. Dan, what are you having for the game at Brentford?
I'm going to go for a 3-1 City win.
That is 11-1 and £110 if you're right. Now, a peek behind the curtain. Dan got his answer in first. Dom also wanted 3-1, but you were too late, mate. So what have you gone for instead?
I've gone 3-2 because City are going to concede a second one in injury time because it's...
It's what they do.
It's a thing at the minute, yeah.
Yeah, 3-2 is 16-1 and £160 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. We will finish with a couple of quick listener questions. Get in touch at bluemoonpodcast.com on Blue Sky. You can email contact at bluemoonpodcast.com as well. And if you're on Instagram, just search for Blue Moon Podcast on there. I've started putting stories up before each recording to try and get a few questions in there. And that is how Paul has got in touch. He says, given Bernardo's comments before the Monaco game, it looks like he's leaving. Why do you think so many of our fans are so down on what he's done for the club? Now, while you ever think about that, just in case you haven't heard what happened in the press conference, this is the question and answer from the pre-match.
As you say, the squad's changed so much. There's a lot of younger players now. The captaincy's also changed a lot the last couple of years with Kyle, then Kevin, both leaving when they were captain. I know your contract's up next year, but when you're talking about trying to build that culture and trying to improve these players, are you thinking about staying beyond next season?
I know exactly what I'm going to do, but it's not the time to talk about it. It's time to focus here, to focus at Man City, to try to do my best to put the club back where it belongs. And as I said, as we know that we've had a lot of captains that left in the past, but it's the guys that have the most experience to pass it to the young guys, and hopefully they'll be the next ones to pass that experience on regard of my contract. I'm really focused on doing a proper season with Man City and be as well as possible to perform and to bring back the team and the club to the level where it deserves to be.
So Dom, he doesn't want to say what he's got in store, but it's clearly not staying at City from that answer.
it's not going into the World Poker Tour, is it? giving it all away. So I think it's obviously a little bit weird to have that out there in the October when a contract is running out at the end, but I think on the other hand, like some of these legends who've left, and I think, you know, Bernardo fits into that category. I mean, he's not statue level, like, I think, but I think he would be that rung below, like alongside people like Gundogan, you know, a phenomenal player.
Mosaic or training pitch level.
Yeah, you know, Bernardo Silva crescent at the training ground, that sort of one, yeah.
How many crescents have they fucking got at that training ground?
Surely, given Bernardo's signature move is getting the ball and spinning in a circle, it should be the Bernardo Silva roundabout.
or keep it in the corner, you give him a close. Give him a dead end.
Or the Bernardo Silva T-bar.
Yes, paper cups only. Right, but anyway, so that nonsense we've just talked then underlines that he is a bit of a legend. And I would go on to the thing of so many fans been down on him. I do think there is a little bit of a risk that, and we all do this, that we get very online. And yeah, there will be some people who are like, who is this washed guy? I think washed is the way you'd say it, on the right wing and all that shit. He's obviously been fantastic. Because there was a lot of talk, I saw people on Twitter going, oh, I wonder what sort of reaction Kyle Walker's going to get. Because obviously he got lots of stick online. And obviously he you know, maybe didn't cover himself in glory pretty much any time he opened his mouth. But that stuff is like so secondary. And of course he got a good reception against Burnley because he's been possibly the best right back of the Premier League era and was like crucial to everything, much like Bernardo was and is. It feels like the right time. And yeah, because he'll have done 9 seasons. He'll be 32, 33. He isn't as the one of the reasons people don't like him on the right as much is he isn't as dynamic an attacking threat as he once was. But just, I mean, you think about some of those performances in those Liverpool games, the way he performs in derbies, like the big games with a bit of needling. He's brilliant because he's a wonderful footballer, but also as we saw last night,
yeah,
as we saw in all the stuff around the penalty last night, and then calling Eric Dier diver. He's a bit of a shithouse as well. It's the full thing. So I think one thing we do, I think it's the right time. And if there is this elongated run now to him leaving, it might give people a little bit of a chance to, you know, give their heads a wobble, and he'll get a great send off when the time comes.
Yeah. And what I will say, Dan, is like at the start of the season, I know Guardiola changed his methods and decided to pick his captain. Bernardo is absolutely the right pick for captain, isn't he? He's proper captain material.
Yeah, I mean, I was sceptical about it when it was announced, to be honest with you, but the way that he's carried himself this season, the way that the other players seem to respond to him, like, yeah, I agree at this point that he is the right decision. And I think one of the reasons that perhaps people are a little bit down on Bernardo is that he's not like a game-changing player. Like, he has, on occasion, pop one in the top corner, or, you know, he chipped him goals, assists, and what have you, and is a very technically brilliant footballer, I think. But I think he's one of those players that when things are going well, when we're playing well, when we're winning, he helps control the tempo, he can slow games down, he can do all that sort of stuff. But when things are not going particularly badly, he's not that kind of player that steps up with a big moment that will kind of score a goal, that will grab a game by the scruff of the neck. And I think that puts people off him a little bit sometimes. People talk about how he just sort of runs around and, you know, puts in a sort of 10K run instead of actually sort of like contribute a lot to the game. People say that as to his detriment, whereas you think, you know, the work rate on this guy is phenomenal. And actually, I don't think any of the good success that we've had over the years would have been possible without him, without that work rate, without that contribution, without all those things that he does in that kind of supporting role. So sometimes I think it boils down to perhaps younger fans not really getting that side of the game. Like, he's probably not very good on FIFA, so people, you know, don't respect him in that way or whatever. But I think
EAFC, yeah, these days, mate. EAFC.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. My apologies. I think he is a legend of the club over the time that he's been there. I'm still not convinced he will actually leave at the end of the season, because he's tried to leave about 8 times in his period, hasn't he? And just not been able to for some reason. So
I know your contract's up, Bernardo, and you are free to go, but no, just one more year. Go on, then. All right. Yeah.
So yeah, if this is his last year, let's enjoy him. Well, we can, I think.
Yeah. Final question for this week comes from Rob on Blue Sky, who says, since everyone seems to pretty unanimously agree that the penalty at Monaco was a howler, what refereeing decisions are you still not over? I've still not forgiven Mark Glattenberg for giving Spurs a penalty when it hit Sterling on the back.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, while you two have a little bit of a think, I just want to chuck in one that still winds me up to this day, because there's no way that he would ever be able to do it, like repeat the feat. Graham Poole disallowed Richard Dunn's free kick at West Brom because he hadn't blown the whistle, and Dunn just ran up and belted it in from like 25, 30 yards, whatever.
Amazing
it was.
Goal, that.
And I just remember Graham Poole turning around with his whistle in his hand going, no, I said wait for the whistle. And then obviously they took the free kick and nothing happened.
The worst thing Graham Poole ever did, and he booked someone 3 times in a World Cup game. So that is, you know.
So that was, because the thing about that Richard Dunn one is you think, he's never doing that again in his life. That is awful that he's had that taken off him. But also, the worst thing about that for me personally was that I was watching that game in, I think the now dearly departed Jabez Clegg, just off Oxford.
Throwback.
So yeah, and there was a United fan in there. I believe City lost that game 2-0 or something.
Yeah.
But he was giving it like full, like whatever the reverse of Burt is, rag, I guess, whatever. Like, properly being a, just being a bit of a,
he was well on his way to Ragnar Rock, is what you're saying.
Yes, he was. All the sails billowing. But so when Dunn scored, in my excitement, I gave it full beans to this fella. And then it's been disallowed. I think I did leave after that. It's like,
horrid.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, Dan. Any decisions that still wind you up? I mean, there was one that kind of half came back to me earlier in the show, but I've now forgotten it again. Aguero against Monaco in 2017. Subasic, the goalkeeper, just wipes him out, and he gets booked for diving.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, not a podcast appearance goes by where I don't mention the phantom penalty at Old Trafford in 1996.
that's the ultimate, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get that one in. And also, I'm still wound up by the infamous Spurs Champions League game where Aguero's goals, Sterling's goal, wasn't it, Dislau for Aguero being offside.
That's a bad decision, though.
No. The handball against Llorente. Wasn't given. Yeah, because when they showed the replay of that, and this was like early VAR days when they were being very anal about everything,
yeah,
you could see the skin on his arm ripple where it hit his arm. Even.
And the only incident of... or instance, I mean, mix those two words up if you want to, of the referee going to the screen and going, no, my original decision stands.
Yeah,
like, maybe, that never happens.
Yeah.
Didn't they change the rules in the back of that?
Yeah.
They're like, because it was deemed it was like not intentional, so it bounced in. But after that goal, the season after, it was like anything that struck someone's arm and went in, that was to be disallowed.
Still wounded by it.
Yeah. Let us know your terrible decisions that still wind you up if we've forgotten any, and I'm sure we have. But for now, that is it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests, Dom Farrell.
Thank you.
And Dan Burke.
Cheers, everybody.
We have a clip of this week's Nostalgia episode coming up. That was City fan Bob Toole inducting Stephen Ireland into the Cult Hero Hall of Fame. If you'd like the full thing, you can sign up to be a Patreon member. It's just £2 a month for the extra show every week, and you can get it by going to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week after the trip to Brentford. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Leicester players would fall by the wayside and drop out of the team, but it actually seems to make them a lot better. That season is like still one of my favourites of all time in my lifetime. And Ireland and Johnson are a massive part of that.
His next goal after that Preston one was a winner against Sunderland at Eastlands. He celebrated by dropping his shorts to show Superman underwear.
And this is like a key ingredient, isn't it, really, to be a cult hero, just random shit like this. And like, we were playing good football for the first time in a good few years. There was like smiles on a lot of people's faces and sort of almost carefree attitude and approach to our football. And this kind of epitomised it, because it's a bit of a laugh, really. There's nothing major at stake. We're not like worrying about getting relegated. We're obviously not challenging for any silverware, but we're just having fun playing football. Like you say, it spawned a chant about him, showed that he's a bit of a nutter, and he was really talented as well. So it was a.
Can't remember if we knew about things like, you know, his massive pink Range Rover at this stage, or if this was later down the line, and this was kind of like one of the first moments of, oh, that island's a bit odd, isn't he?
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.